Did you ever notice when Henry Blackaby gets up here and he stands here a while? You ever wonder what's going on in his head while he's doing that? I often have. I'm anxious to see what's going to come out of this head this hour. It's amazing. I've been meditating and trying to understand the book of Hebrews lately. The speaker talks about Hebrews when I get here. Last night, Henry was talking about suffering. It's what I wanted to talk about this morning. So it's amazing how these things hopefully blend together. It said, one time Jesus said to his disciples, I'm going to leave you, but I'm going to talk to my Father about you. Just think, God and Jesus talking about me. What's he going to give us? Like kids, I used to take trips and the kids were always anxious to see, what am I going to bring? What am I going to bring? What did he bring? What's he going to give us? A helper, he said. Is that all, a helper? He owns the whole world, he's going to give us a helper. And he will abide with you forever. That's the tough part. Do you realize what that means? He's in on everything you do. I hear people say sometimes, I didn't say anything to them, but you don't need to. God is in on your thinking, too. That ought to make some of us uncomfortable. Or that would make some of us very content. That what you do and say and think rings true with what he wants you to do and say and think. I'll send you a helper and he will abide with you forever. You know, I'm in an advice-giving business. We had three kids. They're grown up and gone now, and I like this stage of family life the best by far. They're gone. It doesn't mean we didn't like them. It means that there's a stage of life where they ought to go. Every once in a while, a lady calls me up and says, I want to make an appointment for my boy. How old is your boy? 42. There's something wrong there. But my kids, they used to ask us, my wife and me, can we go to a certain place? And so we'd talk about it, my wife and me. She was the world's greatest expert on the subject of those three children. Nobody in the world cared as much about those kids as she did, or knows much about them. I claim to run a close second to that. And besides, I'm a professional psychologist. Now, those kids ought to be thrilled that the two of us, the two people in the whole wide world who care the most about them, are going to make a decision on their behalf. And so we make our decision and we announce it to them. No. Now, these are psychologist kids. So they say, well, Father, when we think of your qualifications and your dedication, your commitment to us, we know you have our best interest at heart. We'd be delighted to stay home. You believe that? They would say, what? Imagine addressing a professional psychologist like that. You can't do that to us. That was their response to our finest thinking. You can't do that to us. What are you trying to do, make a freak out of us? Don't you know that everybody else is going but us? How will we explain this to them? No, I'm sorry, but you can't go. So you try another angle. You know, we suspect that you don't love us. If you loved us, you'd let us go. You say, no, you can't go. So they're off there coming up with another angle. What do they care about what I think? They want to get out to do what they want to do, that's all. They don't care what I think. They come at me again. So you call yourself a Christian. Deliver me from Christianity, if that's the way Christianity is. Can we go? We want to do what we want to do, don't we? We're going to do everything we can do what we want to do. So we better be careful what we want to do. It lines up with the Word. Now, there are a few Bible verses I want to start off with this morning that I've... What happened to my notes? Here they are. I've read these before. I want to read them to you again. You know, as we said many times here this week, that we need to love the Lord our God with all our heart and soul and mind and energy. And Jesus said, if you love me, you will keep my commandments. That's how you'll know. So we've got to be interested in his commandments. And this verse, I bumped into this recently, and I just like this verse. It's Proverbs 1, verse 33. He who listens to me, who do you listen to when it comes to making judgments? He who listens to me will dwell safely and will be secure and without fear of evil. That's a pretty nice way to live, isn't it? If you listen to him. So when you come to tell me how you're restless and you're anxious and you're worried, what are you telling me? You're getting your information from the wrong person. That's all you're telling me. Your body will let you know if you're out of tune with God. Your muscles will tell you that. You have trouble breathing. Your heart might be beating too fast or too slow. Your body cries out, I want you to get in tune with God. You know, people tell me when they've studied this work called The Heart of the Problem, when I get to the anger chapter, that seems to be a tough chapter for everybody, that anger chapter. Amen. You know, what is it about anger that's so difficult? You see, you can tell when you're getting angry, can't you? Your heart starts letting you know that you're angry. And your muscles start letting you know that you're angry. Now, when you straighten that up, then your muscles will let you alone. They'll let you go. And you'll be at rest. But Jesus talks about, in Hebrews, he talks about being at rest. I want you to enter into my rest, he says. My rest. A body at rest is a signal that you might will be in tune with what he's doing. A body that's not at rest might be a warning to you, like a red light on your dashboard. There's another verse here that I like. It's in Isaiah 48:18. If only you had paid attention to my commandments. If only you had, then your well-being would have been like a river, and your righteousness as a wave of the sea. If only you had paid attention to my commandments. So we need to be careful about what we do. And it lines up with the Word. Well, I want to talk a little bit this morning about lining up with the Word and obeying, being obedient to the Lord. This process of obedience, I found a verse in his book, this Hebrew book, that I didn't like much. It says, this is Hebrews chapter 5, verse 8. Even though he was a son, yet learned he obedience through the things that he suffered. Learning obedience through the things that you suffer. I like to avoid suffering, don't you? If you want to be obedient, maybe that causes you to suffer. Well, I've had some experience with suffering a little bit. I remember my late wife was struggling with a cancer. And talking about accepting the guidance of the Lord. We told the Lord that we didn't appreciate that cancer. We'd like him to remove that cancer. He didn't remove the cancer. The one time I told him, God, I didn't like the way he was treating me. And if he doesn't do something, I'm going to tell other people about how he's treating me. You know, sometimes we sing our praises, but in our hearts many times we are critical of God, aren't we, and what he's doing. Well, this doesn't turn out very good, but I struggled through that. There's a struggle to accept suffering. And my wife had to accept that too. There are three Bible verses that became very clear to us, very precious to us during that time that she was struggling with her cancer and I was struggling with watching her. And these three Bible verses are, one is in Psalm 118:24. This is the day that the Lord hath made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. And then in the morning, she would wake up in a lot of pain. And we'd remind each other, this is a day that the Lord hath made. You're going to need a lot more joy than you ever needed in all your life today, a lot more than you had yesterday. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. We learned to be glad with that. We enjoyed watching her die. That's what it comes down to, isn't it? I got through my wailing and objecting like my kids. My kids were so convinced that my judgment was wrong many times. You know, I got a letter from my daughter when she was 45 years old. She wrote me a note and said, I understand now what you were trying to do to us when we were growing up. I have a teenage daughter now too, she said. It took her 45 years to write that note. I mean, to the kids, these parents, how stupid can parents be? And they're so sure that they're right. Well, that's the way we were praying. We were so sure that we were right. We, if we could just direct the Lord, he'd act different. It would be something if we let him direct it, if he let you direct it, wouldn't it? Well, anyway, she passed away. But those verses became very precious. This is the day that the Lord hath made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. Now, there's another verse, and that is in Deuteronomy 33:25. As your days, so will your strength be. And watch the Lord give her enough strength to last her a day. That's all she needed, and he gave it to her. And there's another verse that became very precious, Nehemiah 8:10. This day is sacred unto the Lord. Do not grieve, because the joy of the Lord is your strength. Joyfully suffering. I found another verse in Hebrews that I puzzled over. It's a strange verse. It's in chapter 12, Hebrews chapter 12. And it's the second verse. Well, let's read the first verse. As we also, though we are surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses, as all those witnesses that he was talking about in the previous chapters, let us lay aside every weight and the sin that does so easily ensnare us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and the finisher of our faith. This is the part that troubled me. For the joy that was set before him, he endured the cross. How could that be? Enduring a cross. What kind of life is that? And be glad to go to the cross. You know, I got to thinking about my football days in high school. You know, the football, we would come to school 3 weeks earlier than the rest of the students to get ready for the football season. And we would, we'd have as calisthenics. They'd ask us to kick our feet out from under us and land on our shoulders and roll over. And we'd make two lines. I'd run out and this other guy come and tackle me, and he'd hit me. A good tackle. You know, football is like that. We're getting ready for the game. Football means you're going to take an unmerciful beating for 2 hours. That's what football is. You see, the signal is called, bang. Signal, wham. Signal, wham. Signal for 2 hours. That's football. Great sport. I knew that I could possibly break my back. I knew that I could possibly break my leg. There were days when I went home with a black eye. I did it for my team. I was proud of my black eye. I gladly gave him another black eye. I broke my, look at that nose, I broke it twice for my team. Gladly. That's football. I remember one time I was laying there after the game, I was breathing dust, I couldn't even move. But my buddy was laying over there. And we rolled toward each other. We helped each other up. And we're staggering to the locker room and saying to ourselves, wasn't that a great game? Who do we play next week? Listen, that's suffering. You know, it's amazing about suffering. You take a fellow that stabs you, that's cruelty. But you take a surgeon that cuts you open, that's mercy. It's the same kind of a scar, same pain. Right? You get a tooth knocked out, that's violence. The dentist pulls your tooth, that's good. They're both doing the same thing. It makes a difference why you're doing it and what you're doing, doesn't it? You take an unmerciful amount of beating to be a football player, and you're glad to do it. And I think that's what Jesus approached God once and said, God, or Dad, could you release me from that obligation? Right. What's God going to answer? Answer was, no. You've got to go through with it. Right? And he went through with it for the joy that was set before him. And once he got no for an answer, he gladly went through with it, is the idea here. That's the way we ought to be looking at life, shouldn't we? Well, you know, during those days when my wife was dying of cancer, I found out that I had Parkinson's disease. And one of the things I enjoyed in life was a good balance. I like to go upstairs 3 at a time, downstairs 4 at a time. Play all kinds of games. I just loved the harmony of the body. I lost that. Gone. Another thing that happened, I was in the business world at that time. I was in a big deal. Big deal. But it was going belly up. It was going to cost me $250,000. Those three things are going on at the same time. I tell you something, there's enough peace in the world to handle that much trouble. I don't know about any more than that, but I know you can handle that much. I think that's why he did it to me. But I found another thing about Parkinson's. It doesn't let you sleep. I would wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and I couldn't go back to sleep. That's a terrible time of night to wake up, isn't it? 3 o'clock in the morning. Well, I decided that if I'm up, might as well do something. So I start to write. I discovered that if I go into the shower room, take a hot shower as hot as I can stand, and turn on the cold water, it wakes you up. You try it. I was awake. You know what I found? I met God in a dining room. He was there. Ever since then, between 3 and 7 o'clock in the morning, I started to write. That's where the heart of the problem came from. That's where the rest of these books have come from. I can't run like I used to. Listen, be careful about challenging God. He told me for years, write, 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 write. People told me, you ought to write. I was thinking I ought to write, but I didn't write. Because I either had to write or play tennis, and that was easy. Play tennis. The Lord, I think, just clobbered me and said, I mean for you to write. And I want to do it between 3 and 7 a.m. That's my regular schedule. Between 3 and 7 a.m., there aren't many people moving. It's very quiet. It's a blessed time. And I live in a place where I can sit there and watch daybreak and watch the sun come up miraculously. You can set your clock, and when the rim of that sun will come up above the ocean, we have the ocean out there. This is a beautiful, beautiful time of day when the Lord and I get together every morning, 3 to 7. Wonderful thing, Parkinson's. I thank God for Parkinson's, because I never do it any other way. Now, maybe you're just as stubborn as that yourself, and you're going to do what you're going to do, And don't be surprised if God clobbers you. Because if he has something for you to do, he's going to see to it that you do it. And we might just be stubborn enough to fight him all the way to the end. But you know, there's been a lot of blessing from these books. I don't know what's going to happen to this next one. Can you imagine Blackaby and Brandt writing a book? Listen, if ever there's a miracle, that's a miracle. I was feeling like I tried to write something and he'd come behind and explain what I tried to say. So if you want to know what the heart of the book is, read his stuff. There's a discipline involved in serving the Lord. It involves suffering. Don't be afraid to have that happen to you, whatever it is. God is, he knows what he's doing. Well, he taught me about money. I asked him to teach me about money. He wiped out $250,000 of my money. My money. Well, I asked him to teach me, have an attitude about money. What's money? Gone. Well, you know what? 4 years later, he showed me how to get it back. I found out that when I got it back, like that much money is just a big headache. You had to do something with it. With things the way they are today, what to do with that much money is a big problem. All I asked for was a problem back. What a relief if you don't have $250,000 to be responsible for. You ever think of that? Thankfully, you just have a small ash pile. Well, there's another thought that I want to leave with you this morning. It goes back to Hebrews chapter 12. It starts with the 14th verse. I think this is a very important thing for all of us to face up to. It says, verse 14, pursue peace with all men. A peaceful interaction with all men. All men. It includes your wife. And your husband. A peaceful relationship in your marriage. Now, that's something you have to work on every day, isn't it? But to not have that is to violate one of God's rules, I think. He means for you and your wife to be at peace with one another. But all men, can you think of somebody that you ought to fix your relationship with? It says, pursue peace with all men and holiness. A holy, peaceful relationship with all men. Pursue this. I think that implies you're not going to make it, but you can pursue it. In my experience, relationships keep changing so fast that I'm always pursuing this and never quite getting there. It's like if you're going to set a goal for a certain weight, it's hard to attain it, isn't it? You keep missing it, but you keep pursuing it. You keep at it. Your relationships are out of tune. You want to keep at keeping them in tune. And then it says that, look diligently, lest you fall short of the grace of God. I mentioned this once before. Look diligently, lest you fall short of the grace of God. Could it be that some of you could have been more gracious to each other already today than you were? To pursue this idea, I want to be as gracious as the Lord. And our salvation is by grace, isn't it? It's undeserved. And everybody deserves your effort to be gracious to them. Whoever they are, whatever they are, to grow in grace. very important. And then it says, lest any root of bitterness springing up cause trouble. A little tiny root of bitterness. You know, sometimes I hate to take a trip in these days because I'm going to hear about somebody else whose marriage collapsed. It's familiar today, isn't it? 20 years of marriage gone. 25 years, 30 years gone. Another one bit the dust. I keep hearing it wherever I go these days when I travel. A marriage is collapsing. Well, it happened. There was one man I worked with for a long time, for 10 years. He was the head of an organization, a Christian organization. As far as I was concerned, he was a model Christian. He and his wife were dedicated and committed to that task, and they worked shoulder to shoulder for all these 10 years. If I were ever to appoint a couple, the model couple, follow them. And all of a sudden, one time I came there, and he had announced that he was resigning his position after 10 years, and he was going to divorce his wife, and he was going to marry another lady. I couldn't believe it. I got a chance to talk to him. I said, how did this happen all of a sudden? We have been holding you up as a model couple. He said, this hasn't been all of a sudden. This has been going on for a long time. I'm talking about the model couple. She's backing him up. He's pouring his life into one of God's projects, and she's backing him up. Look at that couple. Why couldn't we be like them? Well, he said, this started shortly after we were married, and the first debate we had was over the checkbook. Money. She wouldn't keep up the checkbook. He tried to help her to keep up the checkbook. He gave her tips. She wouldn't keep up the checkbook. And finally, after a couple of years, he gave up. And he didn't say anything more about the checkbook, but he let a little root of bitterness spring up that he was aware of every time he looked at that checkbook and the way she kept it. And she knew exactly how he felt about the way she kept that checkbook, and she wasn't going to budge. If he didn't like it, he could lump it. That's the relationship they had with reference to the checkbook. And it's funny. Why couldn't he concede with his heart? Or why didn't she do it right? That's where we are. Maybe you're living with somebody, and they know exactly what you'd like them to do, and they're not going to do it. And so you nurse your little root of bitterness. Look out. Well, another thing that happened, has to do with time. He was one of these fellows that if it's 8 o'clock, he wants to be there at 8:00. Not 8:01. That's late. 8:00. Preferably 7:55. Her schedule was 8:10. And he explained to her the merits of being there on time. And she listened to him, but she did what she pleased. She maintained. She found a way to be late no matter where they went. And he kept after her and kept after her. They get so mad at each other sometimes. They'd go to a meeting, a public meeting, a church meeting. They didn't. It's a frozen. No conversation all the way to church. Then she takes his arm, and they put their smile on their face, and they go into that church. You know, one thing these people did cooperate with, they cooperated in making people think that they had a good marriage. Isn't that strange? You'd think they'd try to cooperate in having a good marriage, wouldn't you? But no, they cooperated in making people think they had a good marriage. In other words, they were building this relationship on deception, the deceiving of other people. They got so used to deceiving their friends that they thought it was normal. Well, so then along came the children, and they couldn't be reconciled to that. And one day, after they were married like 22 years, he got in trouble with a physical problem, and he had to go to a therapist who was a lady. And this therapist got to talking to him as she was working on his shoulder. And she started telling him some of the problems that they had at their house. And he was saying, I can understand that. I've got the same problem. Well, you've got the same problem. So they started swapping problems. And pretty soon, he is massaging her shoulder. There's nothing wrong with her shoulder. And they're saying to themselves, what a wonderful relationship this is. What's wrong with these people? They have something in common. Mutual rebellion. A mutual bitterness. You know, mutual bitterness can be like a magnet. Two bitter people get together. See, he would say, they were appointed on a committee, for instance. And they'd work together. They'd meet somewhere, and he'd get there, and she was there already. Well, you're early. Yeah, usually early. Is that right? My wife is never early. Oh, my husband, he's always late. So we have one more thing in common. We have punctuality in common. Isn't it nice to be in tune with somebody? And he was telling her about some of the issues they talked about while she was massaging his shoulder. About the kids, and she too had problems with her kids and coordinating things with her husband. So they had these problems in common. Well, they met one time at our lunch to work on a report that they had to make. And his hand touched her hand and just lingered there a little bit. That felt so nice. One time, he picked her up to go to this meeting, and he brought her home. He walked her to the door, and he kissed her. He hadn't had that experience in a long time, a thrilling kiss. Well, by that time, they were on the skids. And before they came to, they had destroyed two careers, they destroyed two marriages. Pity. They just created a big, unmanageable mess. By the time they woke up to what they were doing, they had no good choices at all. So I tried to help them sort out the least troublesome solution. There was no good solution. But how did this start? A little bitterness. Listen, when this Bible tells you to watch out for something, you better take it seriously. Now let me read that to you again. Pursue peace with all men. See, they were maintaining an armed truce. They were not fighting with each other. They were just putting up with each other. He endured the way she did the checkbook. You see, he quit talking about it, but he didn't quit arguing with her about it. Now, I don't know, but have you ever had this kind of experience? This man was telling me. His living room was a mess. She just wouldn't keep up her living room. Finally, one morning he said, I'm sick and tired of this living room, and when I come home tonight, I want this living room straightened up. You understand that? So he left. And he came home that night. He forgot all about it. Had a good day. He walks in the house. Hello? No answer. Hello? No answer. He goes in the kitchen. There she is. Well, hello, can't you hear me? No answer. Well, have you ever been? There's a lot of difference, isn't there, between peace and silence. So they went into the dining room to eat. And he tried again. Could you tell me what's the matter? No answer. This is a conversation that went on in that dining room. How about that? So he slips into the living room. He hides behind his newspaper. After a while, she comes into the living room and sits down. And there the two are in the living room. And this is what happened in the living room. You ever had that happen? She's sulky. She'll teach him to open his mouth. That's the way they get along. A little root of bitterness because you're not willing to be reconciled to one another. And the issues are sometimes not very great, are they? Now, the Christian life is a matter of reconciling what is in your heart with what comes out of your mouth. If they are not in tune, you're looking for trouble. And I tell you, potential trouble is when two people with a mutual bitter heart meet. It's happening all over. That man, his eyes are just sparkling. I've never known such a relationship as this. He's talking about an adulterous relationship, and he said, I've never known anything sweeter than this. This is a man who's been running a Christian organization for 10 years, and he's saying, this is wonderful, this is beautiful. His eyes sparkling like a teenager. Nobody could tell him anything. You see, he wasn't living the way he should. The Christian life is not a matter of improving your acting ability. But people come into your life. It says you have to deal with the things in your life. You have to deal with the people that are in your life. And so you have to deal with your wife just the way she is. And you need to love her just the way she is. And your love is not dependent upon her behavior. It's dependent upon your relationship to God. Your husband is his, there he is. And he's not going to change. So I help him. And neither are you. And so you develop that kind of a relationship. And yet these two people could agree on one thing. When we go out in public, we will act like we're friends. And wherever you go, you have people acting like they're friends. I was talking to a young couple. They were coming over to our house. And all of a sudden, this beautiful relationship broke up. And so I asked her, what happened? Well, he had some behavior patterns that she didn't like. And when he behaved the way she didn't like, she didn't say anything because she was a sweet kid. And that's the way she took care of her hostility toward him. But every time he did something like that, if you can imagine, each time he does something she doesn't like, it's an invisible break. That long, that wide, that thick, put in place. Another one, another one, another one, another one, another one. 10 times a day. Pretty soon you can build a huge brick wall between you and your partner. It's not made of stone. It's invisible, but it's just as real as a brick wall. And you want to be dismantling those walls. Now, if you go into the heart of the problem, I think you'll discover that they'll help you do that. I say to people, if you take this book and do what it says, you won't have to talk to me. If you don't do what it says, there's no use of talking to me. I'm not going to contradict my book. So there's plenty of help, isn't there, to guide you in doing things the way you ought to do them. And Edsel and his wife are now trying to pick up the pieces. Having destroyed 2 marriages and 2 careers and brought all kinds of criticism on the Lord's work, they're trying to fix it, and it's hard to fix. They're having trouble joining a church because they neglected to take care of that tiny little root of bitterness when it started. You want to make sure that you keep your heart clean and up to date. Well, I had this lady had lost her husband, and she had been grieving for like 18 months, and nobody could help her. Her pastor couldn't help her, a series of counselors couldn't help her, a psychiatrist couldn't help her, one of the leading evangelists that came to town couldn't help her. So they called me in and asked me if I could help her. I was traveling through. Well, what am I supposed to do with all these people have tried and they can't help? What am I supposed to do? That's what I usually ask the Lord that question. And he says, I'll tell you what to do. You know, it's interesting. I used to take a detailed case history of people. I find out that those case histories don't do you much good. Because people lie when they tell you that their case is through. Or if I ask you, give me a case history of your life, what are you going to pick? You're going to pick and choose a few little details of your life. Listen, I found out, I discovered that Christ lives in me, and He knows what's in your heart. And He's in me, and I'm going to ask Him to tell me what to ask you based on what He knows about your heart. You try that if you're working with people. Lord, will you just lead my mouth according to your knowledge for this person? That's why I don't take much time with people. I don't need much. And you can pierce through all kinds of strange ideas if you're trusting the Lord to guide your mouth and your mind according to His knowledge of that person. I've come to realize that the less I know about you, the better I like it. You know, I know such juicy stories about people that I can't tell. It's a heavy burden to carry those around. Better not to know them. And so I want to know as little about you as I possibly can. Well, so I asked this. I hear myself saying to this lady, you see, this person, this go-between, said she would like me to come along to when she comes to see you. And I heard myself saying, I don't think I want that. I just want to talk to her by herself. But she doesn't want to do that. Then I can't see her. Oh, I never did that. But I did it. So they tried the second time and the third time. I said, no, if you want to see me, you have to come alone. Finally, she came alone. This was a sad story. This was on a Saturday. It started on a Saturday afternoon. It was Saturday morning. Beautiful Saturday morning. And her husband worked a half a day on Saturday. And she said to herself, this is the kind of day to go and visit my folks, which is a trip about 50 miles. So she called her folks and arranged for her and the family to come out in the afternoon. He's at work. He looks out the window. He says, boy, this is a great day for a picnic. So he called his wife and said, let's have a picnic today. And she said, oh, but I just told my folks that we're going to come over there. Well, I want a picnic. Well, I want to go see my folks. We're going on a picnic. So he comes home, and he meets this stony wife of his, and he meets her, this determined husband of hers. A beautiful day, and they're arguing about picnic versus going to see mother. Well, he ordered her to fix a lunch. Can you catch a picture of her fixing that lunch? Just as rebellious as she could be. Hurry, hurry, he said. Finally, he hurried them all in a car and took off for the picnic site. When they got there, they discovered that in the hurry, they forgot the picnic basket. And so he went back to get it. And the kid said, we're going to go with Daddy. And so they went with Daddy. She said, good riddance to the whole bunch of you. That's the last she saw them because they had a train wreck and there were three of them were killed. And he said, that sounds very bad, doesn't it? And so here she was grieving because of the death of that family. And this lady reassured me when she talked to me. They had a beautiful, beautiful marital relationship. So she comes to see me. And she's burdened now. Why is this? Why can't you get over this? That's my question. Why can't you get over this? You're a Christian. Well, finally I find out that that's not her problem. Her problem is that she was a mean, nasty lady. Beautiful. Beautiful and mean. For a long time. And this was not just an isolated incident. These clashes that they had between them, they happened all the time. Only this time, that tragedy happened. You see, the tragedy, you know, when something like that happens, you focus all your attention on the tragedy as though that's the only thing that's wrong. I had to say, you know, you've got a problem that you had before this accident. You hadn't dealt with it. And the accident has interfered with you taking care of your problem. And your problem is in your heart, and it's between you and the Lord. And you've got to take care. You see, she and I, after we talked about it, we realized that before she got married, she acted that way at home, too. She was just a mean, nasty, beautiful lady. That's what she had to deal with. You know, those people think I'm a miracle man. That lady was transformed just like that. You know, it says in, I think it's in Luke. It just occurs to me. Maybe it's in John. When Jesus showed up at in the upper room with the disciples, where they went after his crucifixion. See if I can find it. This Parkinson's, you can't work your fingers very good. What's your problem? Oh, I can't seem to put my finger on it right now. Yeah, here it is. It wasn't here all the time. John chapter 20. Let's start with the 19th verse. The same day at the evening, being the first day of the week, when the door was shut and the disciples were assembled for fear of the Jews. Can you picture these 12 men locked up, triple locked, scared to death for fear of the Jews? And Jesus shows up. And Jesus stood in the midst of them and said to them, "Peace be to you. Relax. What are you afraid of? What are you afraid of?" They sure had enough reason to be afraid, didn't they? And here comes Jesus in this tense situation and says, "Relax. Take it easy. Calm down." And when he had said this, he showed them his hands and his side, and then the disciples were glad when they saw the Lord. And Jesus said to them, "Peace be to you. As the Father has sent me, so send I you." And when he had said this, he breathed on them and said to them, "Receive the Holy Spirit." That's how long it took. That's about how long it took this lady to get help from her mean, nasty heart. That's how long it will take God to help you. Most people would want to tell me I'm a special problem. If you would listen to my story, you would understand why the scriptures do not apply to me. I'm a special case. God never had one like this before. And then I hear the same old story that I've heard 100 times before. It's the first time around for you. But you know, the book says, "There hath no temptation taken you, but such is common to man." You're not a special case. You know, the wonder of it all is that Jesus took his place beside God, and he's pleading for you. And if you ask him to clean up your heart, it'll take this long. Now, so you read some psych books, and they'll tell you it'll take 2 years. It won't take God 2 years. It may take a psychologist 2 years. Because, you see, he hasn't got any power to work with. All he can do is tinker with the environment. But Jesus goes right to the heart. I don't know how Jesus does that. You know, we live in Florida, and people come down to Florida, and I say to them when they come, "Now look, see that up there? That's the sun. And that sun generates heat. And that heat comes down your body. And if you spend more with your puny white body from the north, you come down here, and you expose your body to that sun, if you exceed a half an hour, you're going to regret it because you're going to burn." They won't listen to me. So they burn. Now, how does that sun burn your skin? I have no idea. But I know it does. If you doubt it, come on down. We'll demonstrate it to you. How does that sun heat this body? I have no idea. How does a prayer for help get from God to your heart? I have no idea. I just know it works. You don't need to cling. The only reason you got your problem is because you want it. It's not too tough for God.
So what is it that is on your heart that you need to clean up? It seems to me that in this setting, you ought to take some time to stop and realize that your relationship to God involves you and God and no human beings. There are no human beings involved here, just you and God. There's not a human being in the world that can interfere with you and God. If it's sin that's in your heart, there's no human remedy for sin. I can teach you how to live with your sins, and that's what therapists are getting better and better at, teaching people how to live with their sins. But I'm in the business of helping you get rid of those sins. That's something else. You know, I'm trying to put some terms together, Carrie and I. Are you depending on reformation or transformation? When you talk to God, you're talking about transformation, not reformation. We're not in the business of reforming people. Our penitentiaries are. By the way, I'm involved with Prison Fellowship, and we have a prison now in Houston. It's going to have 300 men in it. And their Prison Fellowship is managing that prison 24 hours a day. 24 hours a day. And my responsibility is to help to develop the curriculum that these men will be in this program for 2 years before they're discharged. Those men are no problem to God. You know, they can approach God just as well as anybody else. There's no human being in the world that can interfere with their relationship to God. The governor of Texas made a statement for one of our videos. You know what he said? He said, "We're going to give Jesus Christ a chance to show us what he can do in this prison."
Hallelujah.
Good job. Listen, he says you to pray for me. My job, specifically, is to make sure this program remains Christ-centered. That's a tough job. I see it's tougher than I thought. There aren't very many people who want to know what Jesus has to say. Well, I guess I've talked long enough this morning. My prayer was that as I talk, the Lord will talk to you in your heart. And hopefully he has done that to you. There's another Bible verse I found in Hebrews. It's quite a book. It says here, "Beware, brethren, lest there be any of you with an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God." An evil heart of unbelief departing from the living God. You may be in that position. Beware. "Lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin." Beware. "For we have become partakers of Christ if we hold the beginning of our confidence steadfast to the end." He started well, but what we're talking about is finishing well. And in this verse, "Today, if he will hear his voice, harden not your hearts." Today, if you will hear his voice, harden not your heart. I'm going to end here, and I'm going to give you a minute to talk things over with God if you have anything on your heart. Let's just all bow our heads. You have a minute. Oh, with your head still bowed, that's a minute. You can do quite a bit of praying in a minute, can't you? Or if you're just waiting, that's a long time to wait. Let me just close with my prayer. Lord, I thank you for this opportunity to stand here on this platform. I praise your name for the people who have made it possible for us to be here. And I pray that you would take this word and help these people to apply it where it's needed. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.